This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from Jerry Lane Chevrolet and from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And your number, 877-217-5757. And your emails should go to talk@talklouisiana.org. A bit later, we'll hear from Mark Ballard at the Capitol, as we do every Thursday. But we start with Darrell Gissel. He is the Chief Administrative Officer for Sharon Weston Broome, the Mayor President of East Baton Rouge Parish. Many of us have known Darrell for years, going back to his days as the person who was in charge of the Republican Party in this parish, and he has since become an independent. He ran against Mayor Broome in 2016 as an independent, and she was impressed enough to offer him a position, which he accepted as Chief Administrative Officer. 6 years now for the mayor, I guess, yeah, six years as Mayor President, and if she runs for a third term as expected, Darrell will likely be with her for 12 years, so there's a lot to be done in the second half of the Broome administration if things go as they likely will, and we like to keep mayors in office. We reelected Tom Ed McHugh 2 times. We reelected Kip Holden 2 times, and Sharon Weston Broome will be an overwhelming favorite if she chooses to run in 2024, despite some problems that she is experiencing and other mayors across the country, and shootings have been front and center. It's the topic of discussion, and we're going to talk about St. George, but multiple people are dead after a shooting at a Tulsa hospital campus. At least 4 people killed, and the gunman killed himself at a Tulsa hospital, the 233rd mass shooting in the U.S., according to the Gun Violence Archive. And in Baton Rouge, as we know, we have, unfortunately, one of the highest rates of homicide in America. And before we went on the air, Darrell told me that there were 600 guns stolen out of cars last year in East Baton Rouge Parish. So there are lots of guns, and unfortunately, some bad people get access to them. They're not supposed to be going into people's cars, but it would be a good idea for people who are going to leave their guns in their vehicles to at least take precautions so that they're not stolen. That this could, I would imagine, is a problem.
Big problem. And stolen guns end up in the hands of bad people who do bad things. So again, what can an individual do? Like you said, Jim, they can lock up, secure their weapon.
And there are some areas that are particularly notable for this, right?
When we looked at those numbers last year, the highest incident of stolen guns from cars was in the LSU River Bend area.
River Bend, a nice neighborhood.
Yes. I think people are unsuspecting. They don't expect somebody to go through their car.
Yeah, and of course, the worst case scenario is that somebody gets your gun and uses it on you.
Absolutely.
And that, unfortunately, has happened as well. But it's an issue that we will continue to talk about, and we'll talk more about this with Mark Ballard. There are some interesting gun measures that are being tweaked at the Capitol as we head to the finish line next week. And your number again is 877-217-5757. But when yours truly invited Darrell to be on our show, it was primarily to talk about St. George. And some people viewed this as a surprise. We knew that there would be twists and turns in the court. But Baton Rouge won round one with Mary Olive Pearson, who's been on our show a few times, leading the charge. A judge has halted the creation of St. George, siding with East Baton Rouge Parish officials who sued to block the incorporation. And this is Judge Martin Cody, who presided over the week and a half trial earlier in May. And he wrote that St. George would be unable to operate with a balanced budget, and its creation would cost Baton Rouge government $48 million, which made the incorporation, quote, unreasonable. I'm sure you're very pleased with this decision.
Well, in the law, Jim, there have been a lot of questions about how do you process this in terms of legal end. State law requires that you can only file this type of a suit after the election. You can't do it before. People have said, well, why didn't we challenge it before it went to the vote of the people? And the issue always on city parish side was that it would have an adverse effect on the whole. We have a consolidated city government, so we basically operate with a solid budget that services the unincorporated areas and the core of Baton Rouge. The numbers here, if I remember correctly, $40 million would be taken out away from that pot that services a whole. So I think part of the judge's ruling basically was that it has an adverse effect on the whole, the people who weren't able to have a vote in this. And also the judge ruled that there's not enough funding in what they would receive for the city of St. George to operate based on what they said they would provide in terms of services.
And this will go to an appeals court, and we'll see where it winds up. Could go all the way to the Supreme Court. But Baton Rouge has won round one, and a listener asked a question that has been posed before, but I think it's worthy of consideration and your insights about this. Is Huey at the Capitol. I don't think it's the Huey we know best, but at any rate, Huey wants to know why the whole parish didn't vote on this.
Well, because the way that's set up, the whole parish was not allowed to vote. That was a bone of contention in the very beginning, and thus the suit, because it does affect the whole. It affects the people who weren't allowed to have a vote.
And
the one thing in there, too, Jim, in terms of the expenses, the St. George plan always relied on the sheriff to continue providing police protection for the area. And if I remember their plan correctly, they were going to provide maybe $4 million to the sheriff to provide extra policing services for them. In Baton Rouge alone, about 30% of our overall budget goes for the Baton Rouge City Police. So you can imagine what that expense is in a city of 80,000 people, which would be the third largest city in the state. A $4 million expenditure for public safety is woofully inadequate. It's unequal. And I think that's what the judge saw.
Well, this was a closer election than many anticipated. It was 54-46, but this was in a highly conservative area and a highly white area in a city that's about half black. And Gardier was carved out, and that was somewhat suspicious, wasn't it?
Right.
877-217-5757 for Daryl Gissel, Chief Administrative Officer for Sharon Weston Broome, our Mayor President. Now, you said on this program a year ago, I think, that if this were to become reality, that it would imperil and perhaps end the parish lineup that we currently have, that we wouldn't have the consolidated government.
Right.
Do you believe that?
Absolutely. It would have a huge impact. It would mean if St. George broke away, it would mean that you have four cities, Central, Baker, Zachary, and then St. George, and you would have the core of the city of Baton Rouge, which is the largest city that would have no independent governing body. It would just be unmanageable.
So there's a lot at stake.
Absolutely. And if you look at the reforms we're doing in city government, I mean, Mayor is pushes every day. She pushes our team saying, she'll come into a meeting and say, we have 200 days left to the year. What are you guys doing? What advancements have we made? She's really determined to reach certain goals and priorities. Any of those breakups actually stymie our progress. I mean, we would spend years trying to unravel a consolidated government and break away those services for those 80,000 people.
877-217-5757 for Daryl Gissel, the number two person in city government. Kate in Pollard Estates. Kate, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about your introduction that the worst case scenario for an irresponsible gun owner having their gun stolen is not them getting shot, but it's another person getting shot. And that's all.
Well, that's a good point. Although I don't think a person who carries a gun deserves to be shot. I think it would be an equal opportunity and equal impact no matter who was shot, but I hear what you're saying, Kate. But you could have some innocent bystander, and because of the numerical difference between one person and thousands of people, it's more likely that what Kate is saying would happen than the other. But you make a good point. 877-217-5757. As far as St. George, many of these businesses, they didn't want any part of this. Has that affected the conversation? They basically found a way to get out of St. George.
I think you do have a number of businesses that have annexed into the city limits. They're Baton Rouge-based companies. They want to be identified as a Baton Rouge company. They don't want their letterhead to say St. George, Louisiana.
They don't want St. George, Louisiana. But they may get it, but you believe that you're going to win, though?
it the hurdle becomes much greater in an appeal. I mean, they have to basically undo what the original judge ruled on and make their case. Mm-hmm.
And this judge was praised by both sides.
Yes.
So, and it was not a Baton Rouge judge either. So,
right.
Okay.
Right.
Paul on Airline Highway. Paul, you're on with Daryl. Good morning, sir. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, how y'all doing today? Look, man, I just want to say I enjoy the show on a regular basis, but I just wanted to make a comment, not coming against anybody or with anybody, but earlier your guest made the comment that, you know, people don't expect anyone to be ravaging through their vehicles, you know, to stealing other guns. But, you know, when you leave those guns unsecured, that's just like leaving it unsecured in a home for a kid to get it.
Absolutely.
We got to secure those guns no matter where they're at.
That's
but
right.
Expect them ravaging.
We're about to go to a break, but you make a great point. And a kid could go in the car, too, and not know that it was a real gun or not appreciate the implications of firing it. And then we have an awful tragedy. We'll be back. Thank you, Paul. We're back with Daryl after this. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Daryl Gissel, Chief Administrative Officer for Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome. And Daryl is not a Democrat. And he was Mr. Republican in Baton Rouge for many years. And he rubbed shoulders with all the lights of yesteryear, like Henson Moore and David Treen, Bob Livingston. But the party, and this brings us to a question from Holly in the Garden District, the party's changed your former party to some extent. What prompted you to decide not to be a part of either one of the major parties?
Well, you know, I made the decision to run for mayor, actually based on being a community activist for a long time. And my argument at that point was it's very hard to lead a city based with a party label, given the divisions that we have today. The mayor has done a great job of walking through that. She's not running or leading city government mm-hmm. with a label on her shoulder, despite the fact I think that sometimes people see, they feel that, but that's certainly mm-hmm. not the case. I think local government really does require that level of independence.
And another listener notes that it was in the 2016 campaign when you and Mayor Broome were running against one another that we had a mass shooting in Baton Rouge involving the tragic death mm-hmm. of, I think, 4 law enforcement officers.
Absolutely.
Now. So it's happened here, as we know. Do you remember that Sunday morning?
I certainly do.
What do you recall about it?
I remember the fact that they explained the officer that survived that they thought that he would never make it, and he certainly did make it.
For a while. And heroically.
Absolutely. And we know how tough that was for his family.
But there's no way to stop something like that if a person is up to no good, unfortunately.
Right.
I mean, there are ways to prevent that individual from getting weapons, though, and that's where we are in the conversation now. And nothing's going to be foolproof, but if just one of these tragedies is averted, just think if the incident in Uvalde, Texas had been averted, how much better we would be. And these incidents, as we see, they spawn copycats.
Right.
I doubt that the Tulsa shooting last night's going to be the last. It's going to go on and on, and as we as a people, we can do better. But
I think the question too, Jim, is how do we look at those early warning signs? How do we convince family members who may understand that there's a problem mm-hmm. with a family member, mental health wise, et cetera? How do we encourage mm-hmm. people to come forward as opposed to standing back in the shadows and not saying anything?
And that fellow who did it, Gavin Long, he was running up and down Highland Road near LSU. There's video of him deciding where he was going to do his dastardly deed. Imagine if he'd done it on the LSU campus. And now college campuses used to be a sanctuary. In the last few weeks, we've had shootings at Southeastern and at Xavier.
Mm-hmm.
It's awful.
Right. One of my best friends was actually governor or mayor of Blacksburg, Virginia, and they had a shooting there probably
Virginia Tech.
10 years ago. And that was a situation where the professor that was teaching the student mm-hmm. argued that the student was going to do something wrong. She actually threatened, if I'm not mistaken, to quit if they didn't get the student out of her room. So the early warning signs here, how do we detect those?
I mentioned we would talk a bit about the homeless, and I'm a walker, and one of the areas that I choose to walk in, by the way, at night, downtown Baton Rouge is a relatively safe place. There are a lot of cops. But there are also a lot of homeless people. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you would be surprised. It looks like San Francisco. What's going on?
Well, San Francisco is certainly way different than where we are. But what we're seeing is downtown, we've had a homeless population based on homeless services in many cases that are there. We have a shelter nearby that closes at 6 o'clock in the morning. So when people leave, they go to an area that's attractive. But we now have seen homeless issues on the interstate and suburban areas, Sherwood Forest, O'Neill Lane. We have a program that the mayor's instituted where we have what we call hot teams that go out twice a week to basically offer services to people and to move people out of encampments and public spaces. Mm-hmm. Again, offering them services of here's where we will help you go. What we're discovering, Jim, is that many of the people in the core of the city, about 51% of the people we find in the core are not from Baton Rouge, and about 61% of the people in those suburban areas are not from Baton Rouge. These are people who are passing through. The interstate's an easy target for people to find a place to live in a wooded area. So mm-hmm. we're understanding better where people are coming from, trying to direct them to services that are available. We do actually have a bus ticket program, too. If you end up stranded in Baton Rouge, you're on your way through town, we will help you get to a place that you have to go. We're not going to just give you a bus ticket to go anywhere. We're going to make sure.
Which is what Rudy Giuliani was doing in New York.
We want to make sure that the person has a place to go, some family member, et cetera, who will take them in. Mm-hmm. And as we deal with opioids, we have the settlement money coming in, which will help us deal with some of the people in these areas who have drug issues that really need services.
877-217-5757 is your number. A few more minutes with Daryl Gissel. And a listener notes that on previous shows, I have commended Mark Drennan and the late, great Davis Rohrer for their work downtown and asked why I haven't done the same for Daryl Gissel. Well, I have.
Oh, yeah.
I have. And I would put you right there with them, maybe even ahead of them, because you were at this a long time ago when Baton Rouge downtown was a wasteland. Daryl Gissel was trying his best to get Spanish Town, in particular where he lives, spruced up, and boy, did he do it. And I lived there for 9 years in the house that was available when I decided to buy a house in another part of the city. 30 years ago for $27,000, I believe, is now on the market for $1.2 million, Daryl Gissel. You did a good job.
Well, it actually has an extra lot that comes with it.
But the house is the big attraction.
Right. But I think we see, Jim, and I had a meeting last night with a resident leaders program that the mayor's established, trying to help people in disinvested communities learn how to get their neighborhoods back on their feet. And it's exactly what we went through downtown. It's empowering communities to come together to take charge of their own destiny. You know, years ago, we had huge push to help develop the southeast part of the parish, and we left a lot of these areas north and in the central part of the city unattended to with a lot of aging issues. So it's now a matter of trying to go in there and help revitalize those communities.
And you grew up in New Orleans, right?
Yes.
But
so to me, the core of the city, the older neighborhoods is what I grew up with,
sure.
What I'm used to.
What you're used to. But if people would see what Baton Rouge downtown looked like in 1992 and compare it to 2022, it's a totally different place.
And if you talk to people in communities in North Baton Rouge, they all think, oh, downtown's a utopia. It was always a pristine place. Not the case. I always tell the story that there was one episode where we had 22 car break-ins in a three-hour period. And when the police arrived, they told one of the residents, who was a neighborhood block captain, lady, if you don't like it, you should move to a safer neighborhood. So we were kind of the bottom of the barrel in terms of neighborhoods. And we picked ourselves up.
It is something. I remember when I was first moving there, I was working as a reporter at the Louisiana Radio Network, 1983. I was going to work at 4:30 and walking from my apartment in Spanish Town Road to 3rd Street, then Riverside Mall. And this car comes down the street and, I mean, rams into about 13 vehicles. And so naturally, this is a news story. And the guy who gets out is State Representative Manny Fernandez, who was charged with DWI. And incidents like that don't happen in Spanish Town anymore.
No. Well, we have some episodes every now and then.
And then Manny ran for attorney general and almost won.
But the downtown success story shows that we do have the ability to revitalize areas of our city that need reinvestment.
Well, we commend you for what you've done for downtown, Spanish Town in particular. Daryl still lives in the area, too.
Yes.
And Daryl is, of course, a tireless guy who's doing his best in state government. And as you know, it's it's a heavy lift at times. It's not an easy post. It's not an easy position to be in, and the mayor president knows it fully well. And she's acknowledged she had some growing pains, but she's also acknowledged that she's glad you've been along for the ride. Mm-hmm.
And I think our greatest challenge, Jim, that I see is coordinating services. We have lots of groups, social service-wise especially, that need to come together, and every day that's our big push, trying to make those services jive and work correctly.
Well, thank you, sir. Mark Ballard is next, and Mark has the front page story in today's Advocate that we will converse with him about in short order. Concealed carry bill, now a school safety bill. A Senate committee stripped the permitless concealed carry provisions in a controversial bill and inserted language to allow teachers and administrators to carry concealed firearms at schools. And we will talk with Mark Ballard about this and more. 877-217-5757. Talk at talklouisiana.org. And we're back with more after this quick timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thanks for being with us. Robin Dow producing, in your number, 877-217-5757. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief, has the front page story. And as mentioned, the Senate panel has stripped the permitless concealed carry provisions in a bill and inserted language which would allow teachers and administrators to carry concealed firearms at schools. And in light of all that's going on in the country, Mark, it is curious that the Louisiana legislature has decided, it appears, to expand gun use rather than to limit it. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm not so sure if it's expanding it or not. I mean, it's going to authorize school districts to kind of choose a protection officer within the school who's trained. And but what it actually did was it gutted the concealed permit portion of the bill. It was, that bill was a very controversial coming out of the shootings that we've had recently, because it allowed for concealed carry without a permit, which also means without any training. And it was widely opposed, but also widely and ardently supported here in the days that followed Uvalde. And so this was brought about by Senator Eddie Lambert. Eddie Lambert from Gonzales. And he basically said, look, the issue now is safety. This bill's never going to make it through as a concealed carry, a permitless concealed carry bill. So let's just take it and fix and look at how can we do safety in the public schools. And that's where it is. Now, it's got a long way to go before it actually gets, onto the governor's desk. And so I guess we'll have to see how it does over the next, 3-4 days? I've lost track of my life.
So, 4 days, I guess.
4 days. It ends on Monday. So we'll see how it goes.
Lambert, in your story, said he was reading about the shooting last night that killed 4 people at Tulsa Hospital just a couple of hours before the Senate Revenue and Fiscal Affairs Committee hearing convened, and said he felt safety was now the major concern for lawmakers. But allowing teachers and administrators to have guns, some would say, opens us up to an even worse scenario. And what happens if one of those people goes rogue?
That's possible. What it is doing is it's setting up an authorization process so that the school district can say, okay, you, one or more administrator, teacher, or security officer can have a gun on school property, but they have to be permitted, they have to be trained, and they can't let the gun out of their sight. I mean, there are restrictions to it. It's not, yeehaw, give all the school teachers pistols. It's a system. Now, I don't know whether it's a good system or not. I mean, this happened like at 8 o'clock last night, and so there hasn't been enough study done on it. But it is a move towards putting armed people in the school for protection against invasions like we saw in Uvalde.
877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard of the advocate in Picayune, Rose on Government. Rose, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mark. I want to say our teachers have enough problems trying to teach our kids with all the pressures that we put on them to make sure that our children are educated. And we've just come through a pandemic where the kids are having stressful moments. We don't need teachers with guns. We need protections of the schools. So please, let's get less guns in our state and more protection for our children.
Thank you, Rose. Appreciate you. And we live in a state that treasures the Second Amendment, and one of those is Governor John Bel Edwards. But the governor last year vetoed the bill that would allow people to have a concealed carry permit without any training, without any background as far as anything beyond what is necessary to buy a gun, and that's not much in our state. But this discussion, of course, is now robust based on what's happened, and a bill, a listener notes, is going before the U.S. House of Representatives that would have universal background checks and raise the age to 21 for purchasing a firearm. My guess is that the Republicans in our delegation, Graves and Scalise and Higgins and Johnson and Letlow, they'll all vote no. I'd be surprised if they voted the other way, Mark.
Well, yeah, I would be surprised if they voted the other way, too. But what I think we need to think about is that there's been a shift in the thought process. I mean, who would have thought that you would have a bipartisan group looking at those kind of bills in hopes of trying to find some way between the Republicans and the Democrats on this issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, John Kennedy, the U.S. Senator, junior senator, and candidate for re-election this year, he was spotted at the Capitol yesterday. And who knows, he might very well be running for governor next year, whether he wins or loses. But a listener notes that Governor John Bel Edwards has endorsed Luke Mixon to be the candidate of his choice in this race, the Democrat fighter pilot, Navy graduate, U.S. Naval Academy. No surprise there, Mark.
Yeah, I was not surprised by that. Surprised more, I guess, that he actually made a choice, because he's usually stayed out of races. But surprised that he made a choice. And if he was going to make a choice, you know, I mean, make a choice of, a guy with a similar background.
He could have chosen Gary Chambers, though, but he chided Chambers for his marijuana spot a few months ago.
Our governor is mm-hmm. is anti-marijuana for recreational uses. I wasn't surprised by that.
No, and Gary Chambers is not a Naval Academy graduate, and my friend Bill Huey, who listens to this show regularly, has said that Mr. Chambers has not graduated from any university. And as we know, Luke Mixon is well-educated, as is John Neely Kennedy, who went to Louisiana Tech, to Vanderbilt, to Virginia, and to Oxford as a non-Rhodes Scholar, and I believe even briefly a one-year tenure. He, for whatever reason, I'm told he went to Harvard Law School and then went to UVA after a year at Harvard. But Kennedy's well-educated, and so is Mixon. And some people say that's a good thing. Others could care less. And in Louisiana, we've got two members of our congressional delegation without college degrees, so I'm not sure it really matters, Mark.
Well, and one of those persons that would say that education could care less would be John Neely Kennedy. He's constantly talking about the overeducated elite that look down on regular people. So, in his view, which would include a man who wears $10,000 suits.
Yeah, well, that's what he's accused of wearing. I think John Kennedy once said that Louisiana's future was Earl Long in a Brooks Brothers suit, and he had an Earl Long a painting on his wall at his office for many years, but I think Earl's come down and probably some conservative icons are up in Washington in the Kennedy office. And we know he has an LSU helmet on his desk, even though he did not attend Louisiana State University. 877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard, who has been covering a Capitol session. The state has money this year, so when that happens, legislators often get into other issues. And one resolution yesterday, Mark has this on page 3A, to study castration as punishment for child sex abuse. This one, it made it through the hoops as a resolution, not as a law. But Morgan LaMondre, the legal director for STAR, testified in Senate Judiciary C on April 26th that little evidence suggests the procedure serves as a deterrent. But nonetheless, lawmakers did this. And Mark, it's hard to argue against punishing child sex abusers.
Yeah, there's not a big coalition for them.
Well, but, I don't think so.
Nevertheless, I mean, the bill itself would have put it into law. And so what this is a study resolution to see, well, what kind of law can we come up with? Or, you know, if what Ms. LaMondre says is correct, or if what Senator Barrow wants is correct. And that's what's going to come out of this study group. And they're supposed to come up with recommendations mm-hmm. and possible legislation by next year, March of next year.
Now, in yesterday's paper, front page, Mark had a story, amended vaccination legislation advances. The bill allows for suits against public entities. Representative Larry Bagley agreed to amend his bill, which originally would have made it a crime for employees of any business to ask if a person had been vaccinated against COVID, to instead create grounds for a civil lawsuit against a public institution or entity. Tell us the evolution of this measure.
It actually started out where it would criminalize, family gatherings where, you know, you hold a Thanksgiving meal where you insist that the people, that your relatives who come be vaccinated, that you could actually get arrested for that, cuffed before the turkey is cut and hauled off to jail. Well, that came out and it has made an evolution through those kind of things. He took out the jail time and made it, that you can get a citation, that pay a fine. And even that kind of was a bridge too far. So he went through, and the Jude C committee is a criminal committee. They, for the most part, handle criminal legislation. And they said, nah, this is still too far. So he kind of came up with this creating a civil cause of action, which means that now your brother-in-law can sue you, but not you. He could sue you or he could sue LSU.
We'll be back with more from Mark Ballard after this quick timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Mark Ballard for a few more moments at the Capitol, 877-217-5757. We won't be able to get to all of you who wish to talk to Mark, but as we know, he's with us frequently, so there will be other opportunities. But David in Atlanta, I know you've been waiting a long time. David, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, David. David, you are on the air, my friend. Do we have him?
Sir,
there we go.
Ted Cruz thinks that should be the door should be locked at these schools. Well, anyone with an AR-15 could blow the door off the hinges in a couple of seconds, I think. So that's a ludicrous idea. And furthermore, you know, Mr. Ballard, I live in a high-rise apartment in Atlanta, and it's mostly Democratic, and there used to be a voting precinct in the hall downstairs. It's a mixed-income apartment. The Republicans have closed the precinct. They have closed many precincts in Democratic strongholds in Atlanta to make it more difficult for people like me, and I'm blind, to vote. Furthermore, you have to jump through several hoops.
All right. Well, Mark Ballard, fortunately, the Louisiana legislature has not delved into things like this, but perhaps it's because Louisiana is not a swing state. We pretty much know how we're going to vote as a people in the presidential elections.
It is true. I mean, they have hemmed around the sides of the election laws, but they haven't actually passed anything as dramatic as what we saw in Texas and Georgia.
And a listener asked me to ask you, and it's good, as another front page story today from Sam Carlin. The governor has agreed to appear before a panel in the Ronald Green case. What does this mean, if anything?
That it all, it's going to be must-see TV, I would say, next week. That the governor and two top assistants involved in this will be asked to answer questions about, you know, what did he know and when did he know it? And I think that that's it'll be.
Yeah, it'll be riveting.
It'll be interesting. Riveting, yeah.
No doubt. Well, we will follow it with you, Mark. It is always a pleasure. Keep up your good work, and please, you're joining us. He's a busy man, Mark is, as you can tell. Every day is an adventure at the Capitol, and every day means a front page story from the man who is the lead dog at the Capitol for the Advocate and Picayune, Mark Bauer. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Have a nice week.
You too. Ryan Britt is with us, the author of Luke Skywalker Can't Read and Other Geeky Truths, and writes about Star Trek every week for Den of Geek and Inverse. He's also covered Star Trek for many other entities, and he's written a book about it, Phasers on Stun, How the Making and Remaking of Star Trek Changed the World. Now, I was a small boy, but I go back to the genesis of Star Trek, a TV show that was not an overwhelming hit, but certainly left its mark and created the place for all these other Star Trek entities to come about. And Ryan Britt, you know that this is a story that has legs. Who would have known in the mid-1960s that we would still be talking about it, and it would be perhaps more relevant now than it was then after five decades? Your thoughts?
Well, I think that it is amazing that it's lasted this long. But I think, Jim, that what I tried to say in the book is that the reason why it's lasted is exactly what you alluded to, that it's changed so much and that it has figured out a way to stay relevant. That said, some of those episodes of the 60s show really hold up. And I watch the 60s show all the time for just, you know, inspiration in general. And it is really great to see something that's endured so well.
Well, we then only had three major channels. We didn't have all these other options. So even a show that was not overwhelmingly popular had millions of viewers. And you note that despite the fact that Star Trek was not an overwhelming success, even in its time, contemporaneously in the mid-1960s, that Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner had more than their share of fan mail, didn't they?
Yeah, I think what's so fascinating about that is that think about all the people who loved them that didn't write a letter. You know, like, we can only measure their popularity by the people that took the time to write a letter. You know, I think about this all the time when it comes to the popularity of things. And, you know, I'm sure you work in radio. I write for the internet and I write books. You know, you only know about the people that get in touch with you, you know, about your work and saying, oh, I like this. So then there's all these invisible fans. And so I think that's what I kind of tried to write this book for, those Star Trek fans, to say, I'm friends with a lot of the, you know, very visible Star Trek fans, and that the book is for them too. But I like thinking about the people that we didn't know about, because as you say, if we judge this by today's standards of viewing, Star Trek would be considered very successful, because it was competing in primetime with a lot of big shows, you know, NBC, CBS, and ABC of the time. But now, you know, Star Trek would be a huge hit.
Well, Nicholas Meyer, the director of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, says, with Phasers on Stun, Ryan Britt has written a comprehensive, deeply researched, merrily opinionated romp through all things Trek. And you've interviewed William Shatner, who's now well into his 90s. And he admitted to you that he was jealous of the Spock popularity, wasn't he?
Well, Shatner admitted that many times. And I think that is a defining sort of feature of the original series, right? That kind of tension between Kirk and Spock, and that tension sort of existed between Shatner and Nimoy. But I think it's sort of, you know, if you think about adventure narratives in pop culture in general, I you know, I kind of compare Kirk and Spock to like Holmes and Watson or something like that, and that you kind of need them both.
Yeah.
Batman and Robin or something like that. But I think that with Star Trek is that it wasn't really pitched that way at first. It was going to be kind of like the captain was going to be kind of the central character. And so Spock becoming a breakout character as the show went on, something that kind of surprised everybody. You know, Leonard Nimoy had second billing. Sure, like we knew that he was, but the idea that he could become, I mean, there's a reason why Spock's on the cover of the book. You know what I mean? Like he is Star Trek. He communicates the ideas of Star Trek, I think, very effectively. And I say that as a huge fan of Captain Kirk and of Mr. Shatner.
The book is Phasers on Stun! Exclamation point. Now, there have been 13 films, a dozen TV series, including five shows currently airing. How did we get to this point?
Well, I think that the art form, if you will, if you can call it that, is just really malleable. It's not reliant on one character, right? Like, even though we just talked about how important Spock is, you know, in 87, Gene Roddenberry came back and proved that you could do Star Trek without any of those characters, with Patrick Stewart as Captain Picard and with the Brent Spiner as Data. You know, he proved that that was possible. And it's hard to find, other than maybe comic books, you know, where there's like a myriad of different, you know, comic books within the Marvel pantheon and Spider-Man and X-Men and all that. But visually speaking, it's tough to find that with other TV or movie properties. You know, you can't imagine a James Bond spinoff in which James Bond doesn't appear, you know, and yet that's what Star Trek is. You know what I mean? That there are Star Trek iterations that are just as popular, in which the characters that made it famous literally do not appear. And that is, it just saying it out loud shocks me that it exists.
It is an amazing American story, and it's become a worldwide entity. And it all started in the mid-1960s with Gene Roddenberry. Did he know that he had something special?
That is a good question, Jim. I think that he knew he had something special after the first few episodes got going. I think that in the early stages, he was just trying to get a show made, you know, because at the same time he was pitching Star Trek, he was pitching a show called Police Story, which didn't get picked up. But in its pilot, DeForest Kelly, who we know as the irascible Bones, you know, is in playing a police doctor in this other show. You know, so I think that Roddenberry was I think Star Trek was his dream project, but I think he was hedging his bets. You know, he had done The Lieutenant, which was this peacetime military drama that had a lot of social commentary and stuff, and the network didn't let him do some of the things he wanted to do there. So a writer who wrote for the original series named Judy Burns told me that she felt that Star Trek was in some ways his revenge against the sort of square studio model to do something that was a little bit more progressive politically, but also just a little bit more outlandish and adventurous, you know, just from,
I got you. Yeah. Let's slide in a call before we part company with Ryan Britt, the author of Phasers on Stun. Doug on Highland. Hi, Doug. Doug, good morning.
Hello?
Yes, you're on. Please be brief.
Good morning. Just offering a thought as a longtime Star Trek fan, you know, Star Trek, like every other program, was a mirror. It wasn't a forecast, and I think the course of history since then has shown that very well, but unfortunately. But it was a mirror of its time, including the aspirations that we had at that time.
It's a good point from Doug. Ryan?
Yeah, I totally agree. In fact, I had a lot more writing about the idea of mirrors in the first version of the prologue, and I toned it down a bit, but I think that there's still a line in the beginning of the book that mentions that Star Trek takes us through the looking glass. So I completely agree with Doug.
And a program that was on the cutting edge of a lot of issues of its time, including race. And it's all detailed and in glory and precisely and quite interestingly by Ryan Britt in Phasers on Stun. Thank you, Ryan. Congratulations on your work.
Thank you, Jim.
And we thank you for joining us back tomorrow, same time, same place. And until then, for Robin Dow, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.